WNYC is supported by Applegate Natural and Organic Meats, humanely raised animals without antibiotics or hormones. This summer, try their 100% grass-fed beef hot dogs. Learn more at applegate.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Eugene O'Neill's most important plays, like Long Day's Journey Into Night, The Iceman Cometh, The Moon for the Misbegotten, are regularly produced on Broadway, but the playwright penned many lesser works in the years leading up to those masterpieces, and most of them have rarely or even never been produced. Under the overall title O'Neill Unexpected, the Metropolitan Playhouse, which specializes in finding rare and forgotten gems of American theater, is presenting two of those early works, Recklessness and Now I Ask You, at their theater on East 4th Street, and it has been extended until June 30th. I'm delighted that it brings the company's artistic director, Alex Rowe, who directed this double bill, to our show, along with two of the play's stars, Kelly King and Emily Bennett. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hello. Thanks.
Alex, how did you even find these plays? Had they been produced before?
Well, they have been produced before, although we don't have a whole lot of record of those productions. And they're all hiding in plain sight, all of the work of O'Neill.
All published?
Is published. You know, there are those collections, you know, great volumes of complete works of O'Neill. I actually found them online, though. There's a lovely website, eoneill.com, where all of his his public domain work is available, you know, for download. And that's where I was perusing, and I found these two corresponded to one another.
And with public domain works, you don't have to go to the estate and ask for permission.
That's correct.
In the program, you write that O'Neill's career began in 1916 when he joined the Province of Players, and that he arrived with a trunk full of plays. How many of those early works are there?
Oh, sure. How many? I want to throw out, say, 20 or so. And that's the apocryphal story, you know, that he had. He certainly had the plays he'd been writing since 1912, I think, are the first one acts we know.
And one of these, Recklessness, was written in 1913.
That's right.
Now, have either of these plays been performed in New York before?
I don't doubt that they have by, say, a university or another small company, but I've never found a review or any coverage of them or any real mention of them.
Kelly, you appear in Recklessness, the earlier and shorter of the two.
Yes.
Were you even aware of it before you began working on it?
I wasn't at all. I had never heard of it. Of course, I was familiar with O'Neill, but I hadn't heard of that play at all.
Do you do research when you start working on something like this?
I research the playwright. I research the period. I research the society where we're going to be playing. Just try and get a feel of what it is that I'm jumping into.
Well, costume usually helps a bit, doesn't
it? Oh, absolutely. Instant character.
And I'm sure you felt that way, Emily.
Oh, absolutely. the costumes... it's so interesting playing a character like Lucy, and Now I Ask You, who's trying to break out of the social norm. She's very philosophical and very high-minded, and so my costumes have been really fun. For a play written in 1917, it's fun to enter in a kimono and quote Nietzsche.
And so. I have to give credit to our extraordinary costume designer, Sidney Fortner, who's done remarkable work for us in these period plays, many of which we've done over the years.
But you designed the sets, didn't you?
That's right, yeah.
So you do double duty here?
Well, I do. Often when I'm directing a play, I have a very clear idea of what I want. And so rather than trying to manipulate or wheedle someone else, you know, if it's plain to me, I do to my own set designs.
Alex does about triple, quadruple duty.
Well, Kelly, as we mentioned earlier, Recklessness was written in 1913. Wasn't O'Neill in a sanitarium recovering from TB that year?
He was.
Was this written while he was in the hospital?
Was it written while he was in the hospital, Alex? I'm not quite sure.
You know, I wasn't there. I don't know exactly where he was when he wrote it.
Actually, when he was starting to.
It has nothing to do with illness.
Well, it has
mental
a lot to
illness.
Do with illness.
You play Arthur Baldwin, a successful businessman married to a much younger woman who learns that his wife is having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of a psychological thriller?
It is. We were talking about this the other day, and I always try and relate my characters to something Shakespeare wrote, and I think that he's more along the lines of Oliver from As You Like It, where he has someone else do his bidding.
Although it seems to have been influenced by Strindberg's Miss Julie.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the other play seems to have been influenced by Ibsen and Hedda Gabler. So Would it have been understandable that a young playwright, Eugene O'Neill, would be looking to the Scandinavians and perhaps Chekhov as well for inspiration?
I think it must have been.
I think so, yeah. O'Neill's work is so autobiographical and so natural, even nowadays.
Let's hope these plays aren't too autobiographical.
Well, I think, honestly, he knew my character, Lucy. I think he knew a Lucy. He actually met Louise Bryant and a political activist, John Reed. They shared a cottage in Provincetown, and they kind of had a three-way relationship, and I believe Louise was the inspiration for Lucy, so I think he did know.
And John Reed was the inspiration for the movie Red.
Absolutely.
But in that play, we get a feel, it's kind of bohemians of the village, analogous to the kind of hipster culture of today.
Absolutely. Trying to...
Wait, was that in the back of your head when you were working on it?
Absolutely. This play is so modern, I think. Everyone on social media taking these stances. I think we have the bohemians in Now I Ask You, and then we have Lucy, who's trying to be a bohemian. But she doesn't really know what that's going to mean for her life, and she starts seeing the cost of that, I think, to really live this bohemian lifestyle. I think she's more conservative than she begins thinking that she
Would she have thought of herself as a feminist?
I think absolutely, yes. She attends talks about birth control. She's very vocal about all that. I think very much a feminist, yes.
And she's resistant to the whole idea of marriage, the idea of being tied down to one man.
She is, and I think that's a brand new idea at the beginning of the play. I think that's where the energy comes from. I don't think she was always opposed to it, but that's the new idea that she enters with, and that's how we start the play.
In some ways, isn't the quandary the question of whether she's really committed to that resistance or whether it's an affected and adopted resistance, so her heart and her ideas are at war with one another, which is part of why I think we find it so relevant now. You know, it's a play from 100 years ago, but it really does speak to the same kind of quandaries we've found ourselves in.
Well, for all of the characters here, when push comes to shove, they turn out to have more traditional values than they profess to have.
Well, you know, it is a comedy, which is part of the big surprise of this particular play, an early O'Neill comedy.
Well, Eugene O'Neill could write funny.
Very, very funny, you know, and here quite intentionally. But it may well be that landing on the conventions is part of the necessary end of that.
Well, let's get back to recklessness, which is earlier.
Yes.
Not funny.
Well, there are those who have thought it is a very black comedy.
You'd be amazed.
I thought it was very funny when I first read it, honestly.
You play Arthur Baldwin, a successful businessman who's married to a much younger woman, as I said earlier.
Yes.
Without revealing too much, we can say that Baldwin devises a punishment for...
On the spur of the moment.
After he discovers that his wife has been unfaithful.
Yes.
And it seems especially cruel.
Yes, it is. It's very cruel. But you know, there are two things that I think that Arthur decides right at the spur of the moment. One is that he's not going to be a victim of circumstances. He's not going to paint himself a victim. And the other is that he's just going to have his way. In the end, he's going to have his way, and he goes about doing that.
I was recently, I saw Long Day's Journey Into Night, and I was struck by the fact that his language is both very poetic and literary and at the same time incredibly natural. Was he already capable of doing that sort of thing in these early plays?
I think so. Do you find there's a good rhythm to the writing?
Yeah, very much. You know, he's learned from the sort of melodramatic predecessors and the influences of his father, so he knew how to write a stage language that was dynamic and vital. But one of the things I think he introduces, and what makes him the seminal and changing genius that he was, is that ability to write natural. He's not writing in dialect so much in these plays, but very natural seeming, even as it is lyrical and poetic and theatrical at the same time. It's a real gift.
Now I Ask You is a longer play. Could it be considered a short full-length play?
I think that's an appropriate categorization of it, yeah. There's a prologue, an epilogue, and three acts.
It was, nowadays we don't ever have three acts, but somehow. It must be, who decides? Is it the director who decides where we're going to split these three acts into two acts?
Well, in consultation with other people, but ultimately, yes, the director decides that, unless there's someone in the concession stand that really says we need a break, you know, to earn a little something. And it seemed to me that Now I Ask You could play, even though it has the three scenes, say, successfully as one, and with a break, what might break the rhythm of the comedy.
Do you see these as having some odd connections? For example, there were gunshots in both of them.
Mm. Right.
Is that something that led you to think that they might be performed, look good together?
Sure, and I'll say that I'm not the only person who's observed the correspondence. I've read in one critic's writing that Now I Ask You is essentially picking up the themes of recklessness, but twisting them. It's like seeing Poe and maybe Neil Simon take up the same idea. There are the same questions of a woman's limitations in her marriage, her desire for another life, and the people, the society around her's response to that. But the gunshot is a great, to me, it's a kind of theatrical joke connection between them.
And they're also about adultery and revenge.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm.
Something, I wonder why this was on O'Neill's mind.
I would say his relationship. Yeah.
Also jealousy.
Jealousy, absolutely. I think his relationship with Louise Bryant and John Reed probably fed some of that. But it is interesting seeing him take a comedic and a dramatic, some would say dramatic,
yes,
take on a theme, variations on a theme.
With nearly unknown plays like this that haven't been seen in New York before, is part of the appeals for an actor in being able to originate a role?
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons I love working at the Metropolitan Playhouse, is because we're able to bring these old pieces to life again, and it's like doing a brand new play. It really is.
I completely agree with that. And I must say, I as an actor, it's difficult when you've seen a play and you've seen someone do the role so well to get that out of your head when you're taking on a role.
Yeah.
I know the cast of Long Day's Journey said they were glad that they hadn't seen other productions of it because they wouldn't compare themselves. And luckily, I didn't have to worry about that because no one really has ever done Now I Ask You in New
you
York.
You might read reviews from 1916, but
maybe,
that's about
but,
it.
But it did feel like doing a new work almost.
And neither was performed in his lifetime either, that mm-mm. we know of.
Oh, they weren't?
No. And Now I Ask You, I think he thought of as an accomplished first draft, but he wasn't quite sure it was right, so he never did see it produced.
They both are clearly the works of a young playwright, but do they give you insight into the later work?
Oh, very much. Mm-hmm. The themes are there. Some of the insight into behavior and the conflicts are really predictive of even something like Long Day's Journey and Tonight, I think, but also Desire Under the Elms and you go down the list. There are the echoes of The Iceman Cometh in some of the way that people behave, and certainly Beyond the Horizon. You just see it again and again. That's part of the fun, of course. They stand on their own, but it's neat to see these anticipations.
Hadn't you done a previous festival of O'Neill one-acts?
Mm, good for you. We did. We presented four one-acts back in 2007, I think it was. We also added in a eulogy or a speech he wrote for his dog in 1940, but we presented it as a monologue. And those were very exciting also. The same sort of thrill with a little less resonance, I think, among the plays, though.
Considering the length of Long Day's Journey, I'm surprised that he could limit himself to just one act at times.
We say you get twice the O'Neill in half the time when you come to the Metropolitan Productions.
The cast changes the sets, moves the furniture in character. Are you always looking for ways to stage plays creatively within a small budget?
Well, I think one of the virtues of our space, a number of people comment on, is its small size. We seat 51, and you sit on three sides of the stage, so you're really in the room with the performers. So in that way, the cast's involvement in moving the set has something to do with the budget, but also to do with the aesthetic. We're all in the place together, and we're all participating in the storytelling together. So that's really where it comes to.
Now, these productions have been extended to the end of the month. Have you found other unearthed gems to give us after that?
That's going to be the secret. We're looking into a number of different eras, really, both from the Yiddish theater and some African-American theater. Some of those plays from the 60s and the 70s, the experiments that we no longer see anymore. You know, were very influential at the time, but have gotten forgotten. Well, I'm doing a little exploring there.
Kelly and Emily, have you done other things with Metropolitan?
Go ahead.
This is my first production. I just moved back to New York. I was in Chicago for a little while working on film
and
television.
Not a bad place for an actor to work.
Not a bad place at all. I love that. I love Chicago. But this is my first play upon returning to New York, and what a joyous return to New York and to the theater. So it's my first time at the Metropolitan.
I've been very, very privileged to do a number of pieces at the Metropolitan. This is my sixth play at the Metropolitan.
So do you have something of a company that you're developing?
They're recidivists. You know, there's definitely a core of actors who come back, but we don't have a standing company. And yet a lot of artists work with us again and again, and I hope both Emily and Kelly will many times in the future.
O'Neill, unexpected, the word unexpected within parentheses, is running at the Metropolitan Playhouse at 220 East 4th Street until June 30th. And my great thanks to its director and the not only artistic director, but the director of these two plays, Alex Rowe, and two of the stars of the plays, Kelly King and Emily Bennett, for being on our show.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
Thank you so much.